KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson in today for Michael Krasny. It is, of course, the first Monday morning of 2016, and while returning to work or deferring New Year's resolutions may be uppermost in your attention today, there is something else to take note of as the new year begins, and that's the hundreds of new state laws that went into effect over the weekend. They impact everything from monarch butterflies to marijuana growing practices. And here to help sort out what those 800-plus new statutes are and which ones we should most pay attention to is John Myers, longtime colleague here at KQED Public Radio and now the Sacramento Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times. John, good morning.
Good morning, Dave. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. It's a pleasure to have you join us to talk about what is now on the books that wasn't before. We can also talk some about what will happen in the year ahead and also a new state Supreme Court ruling that came out today. But John, let's begin by some of the things that are now on the books and go through them, some of them sort of category by category. Since climate change and renewable energy is on the minds of many as the new year begins. There was a law that it will now go on the books that has to do with half of electricity coming from renewables by the year 2030. Tell us something more about that and how that goal would actually be achieved.
Well, I think, you know, Dave, the interesting thing about that particular law, and as you said at the outset here, there are 807 new laws that took effect on Friday, so we won't hit them all. But you're right, that one in particular, I think, is notable on a couple of fronts. It was the biggest climate change fight of 2015 in Sacramento. The law actually does two things in particular. It pushes the utility companies in California to provide more of their energy from renewables, half of it, by 2030. So they've got about a 15-year window to do more than what they've already done. There is a big push to get more of the energy in California coming from renewable sources already. This would very much strengthen that effort, again, trying to move away from traditional sources of electricity generation. It also would require more energy-efficient buildings in California by 2030. Again, trying to ramp up the efforts to use less energy, fewer emissions from bad sources of electricity generation, and thus fewer greenhouse gas emissions. There was one part of the proposal, however, that did not take effect, and it really was the reason, I think, that you saw so many headlines in 2015 about this effort. It would have cut petroleum use in vehicles in California in half by the year 2030, and it was fought tooth and nail by the oil industry and the state legislature, and it didn't happen. So we focused on renewable energy and energy-efficient buildings. It is, I would say, though, part of this effort in California that now really dates back a decade to moving the state to the leadership of climate change efforts around the world. Arnold Schwarzenegger signed the first law in 2006. Jerry Brown has been implementing a lot of this, and I think the governor does see climate change as one of his big legacy issues when he leaves office in a couple of years.
And it also may portend something about what might be fought in 2016. We can come back to this, but those business pressures that sort of stripped the bill of that one area about cutting oil consumption in half, those aren't going to go away, right? I mean, those will be things that we'll see continue to sort of push back and forth between Democrats in 2016.
Yeah. Yeah, and not only from the business end, Dave. I think if you look at just who the constituency of Democrats is in California, because the opposition was led in the state capitol by a group of business-friendly Democrats, but who often represent communities with low-income citizens. And their argument was their citizens could not afford higher prices of gas or couldn't afford an electric car. I think a lot of what you're seeing now in the debate over climate change law in California is, of course, this business environmental conundrum that we have seen in years past, but also these issues of class and geography. And I think that they do dovetail into this larger discussion about the haves and have-nots in California and what policies cost, what the impact in communities would be. And you had some of these Democrats, as I said, who said, our constituents can't afford it. We're not going to do the oil part. We'll do the other stuff, but we've got to keep working to find something that everybody can afford.
Let's come back to more of that at the end of our conversation about what lies ahead in 2016 that dovetails with some of the issues you're just referencing, including, for example, the gargantuan problem of affordable housing in this state. But let's go to another kind of headline topic, just as climate change has been, and that has to do with law enforcement. So much in the news recently about officer-involved shootings in so many cities. California actually has more officer-involved shootings than any place else in the nation, though we have not had the sort of Cleveland and Chicago sorts of experiences so much here. But there's a new law on the book that has to do with how data is collected, right, John, when officer-involved shootings take place.
Yeah, we had a pretty robust discussion in the Capitol in 2015 based on these national incidents. I mean, I like to say that a lot of what the legislature acts on are stories that are ripped from the headlines. And sometimes that they can be very small things and, you know, the legislature reacting to this little thing or that little thing. But sometimes they are very large societal issues, and this certainly was one of them. There were a number of bills that talked about the issue of law enforcement and people who are stopped perhaps based on their race. And so the one law that went into effect on Friday that you're referencing would require law enforcement to collect the information that they have about encounters by police, by the race of the person stopped, and the reason for the encounter and the outcome of the encounter. That data is not collected and shared on a statewide level, and there are lawmakers in the legislature who really want to see that data and understand what law enforcement is doing on the streets in California. I should say that there were other efforts to talk about things like body cameras and to make that a more systemic rule across the state of California. Those did not happen. I think we're going to see that debate come back to the legislature this year in 2016. But this racial profiling law and this data, I think, will be an interesting step forward to kind of see exactly what the situation is on the ground right now in these communities in terms of law enforcement and who they stop and how they stop them.
John Myers is our guest. He's Sacramento Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times, former, of course, senior editor of KQED News, Politics, and Government Desk. John, while we're on the subject of law enforcement and violence, let's say something about one aspect of not exactly gun control, but something that is now on the books that actually had as its impetus the shooting on the University of California Santa Barbara campus back in 2014. And that's giving families the ability to request a restraining order for 21 days to limit or prohibit a family member who they fear may be either in danger of themselves or in danger to others from having access to firearms.
Yeah, this law, clearly inspired by the case of the shooting in Isla Vista back in May of 2014, where the family of the young man involved there had been seeking help because they were worried about him. And they also, this young man had access to weapons and had bought weapons. And so we had another robust discussion here in Sacramento about exactly how to handle that. So the governor signed this law that took effect on Friday, on January 1st, that allows the temporary seizure of guns from people who the courts have determined could be a threat to themselves or others. It was nationally talked about. I think it will be talked about some more as to exactly the procedures for doing that. And again, as so much of what we're talking about this morning, Dave, if you look at what actually happened in terms of laws that go on the books, there were proposals to go much further, but the legislature and the governor found at least some movement forward on these issues. And I think this is one of them, again, looking at these weapons and these people who a court has already stepped in and said could be a danger.
Again, John Myers, our guest, Sacramento Bureau Chief from the Los Angeles Times. If you have a question for John about what the legislature did in 2015 and the new laws that are now on the books, or what they're likely to do in the year ahead, you can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also email us at forum@kqed.org or post your questions on our website or on our Facebook page. Let's talk, John, about a couple of health-related laws that got enormous attention this past year. And first is the new law that basically says every kid has to get a vaccine, no more exemptions for based on parental belief. This actually doesn't go into effect, as I understand it, until the next school year. Is that right?
Yeah. Although when you think about the next school year begins in August in most cases in California. So you've got parents who are going to be having to face this new law within the next few months. They're going to have to prove that their children have had all the schedule of vaccinations that the school district requires. And in particular, the law limits what California used to have, severely limits, almost completely eliminates it, which is this personal exemption from that vaccine schedule based on personal beliefs. That was a hotly debated issue. I got to tell you, Dave, it was the longest lines of people from around California I've ever seen trying to get to the state capitol to testify at the hearings in 2015. It sparked a real social media debate about people who believe in the way vaccines are administered now and those who are concerned either about the contents of the vaccines or the schedule by which doctors give children these vaccines. And so in the end, the legislature passed it. The governor signed it. Those personal exemptions from that vaccine schedule now are almost completely gone. Parents are going to have to show that their kids have those vaccinations before they enroll them in the school year that begins in late summer of 2016. And I think what was really interesting about this debate is it brought together the most unusual alliances you'll ever see in government or politics issues. I mean, libertarians from the Inland Valley all the way to liberal mothers from Berkeley.
Yeah.
And that's not an alliance that you normally see on issues, but all had concerns about the way vaccines are administered. And in the end, the law is the law. There were critics of the vaccine schedule who wanted to try to overturn the law by a ballot referendum. They failed in that effort. And so it takes effect by the school year in the summer of 2016. These kids are going to have to show those vaccination schedules in order to be enrolled.
And what about, John, the new law regarding physician-assisted suicide that's now on the books in California? It's not clear to me exactly when that also is takes effect.
Well, that one does have a little bit of a delay, and let's make sure that people understand exactly what it is. It is a law that says that a physician can prescribe life-ending drugs to someone with a terminal illness through a series of procedures, a series of checks, consultations. There's a number of layers there in that, but it would have California fall in the line of what has happened in Oregon and Washington. The reason why I put an asterisk about when it takes effect, Dave, is that the way it was passed, and this is a little bit of legislative procedure, is it was passed during a special session of the legislature. And all that really means is that it was passed in a different method of getting it onto the books. But that special session is still open. It's still going on. Lawmakers are still technically meeting in it. Until they adjourn that special session, the law can't take effect. Once they do, and we assume that that special session may be adjourned as soon as the end of this month of January, 90 days after that, that end-of-life law will take effect in California. But it was a hard-fought battle and, again, a very passionate emotional issue. In some ways, similar to the vaccine debate, people brought their personal beliefs more than their politics to the issue. And it was a fascinating debate. But yes, California will join those other states sometime later in 2016 in allowing those drugs to be prescribed.
All right. I'm gonna have you play a little multiple choice here. I'm going to give you some new laws that are on the books, and you can pick what you think is the most important for us to talk about. Minimum wage went from $9 to $10. The high school exit exam has been suspended. Some new laws regarding the licensing and regulating of medical marijuana. And motor voter, automated voter registration whenever you go get your license. Of those, or pick another, what do you think will have particular effect, I guess, on people here in the year ahead?
This is like legislative potpourri for 100. You know, I think that they're all important. But let me start, if I could, with minimum wage. And the reason is I think that is the most wide-reaching of the new laws. On Friday, on January 1st, the minimum wage in California went to $10 an hour. That ties us with the highest minimum wage of any state in the country. Massachusetts is at $10 an hour, too. Some of our listeners, of course, are going to say, well, the minimum wage is higher in my community. In some communities in California, they have taken their own action. But statewide, a $10 an hour wage is now into effect. That impacts a lot of low-income earners, and we're going to see a very big debate, I think, in 2016 about going even beyond that, a ballot measure that wants to take it to $15 an hour. And certainly there are efforts in the Capitol to do that as well. So I think the minimum wage is probably the most wide-reaching. After that, I think that this suspension of the high school exit exam is going to be talked about a lot. We've had a high school exit exam now in California for the better part of a decade. And there are some challenges as to whether or not it measures what it's supposed to and whether it aligns with the federal Common Core standards. And so the legislature decided to hit the pause button on the exit exam until it could be reworked. I think that's going to be talked about a lot. And then I want to talk about the voter registration one you talked about, which would more fully automate the process of registering people when they go to the DMV. It's not fully automated. People will get talked about it. They just won't – a button won't be clicked and you'll be registered to vote. But you'll have to opt out of the process versus having to opt into the process before. There's a lot of discussion about exactly who we issue licenses to. Will they actually vote? Can DMV handle the workload? None of that is actually getting implemented immediately. There's still some work behind the scenes that has to allow DMV to start registering more people to vote. But that could be a game changer, depending on who those people are, what their political preferences are. Do they vote? We had incredibly low voter turnout, historically low voter turnout in 2014 in California, and this was thought of to be a way to get more people to the polls.
John, is it something?
Does it happen? We don't know.
Is it something that other states do? I mean, so much of the attention around voter registration and it has to do with kind of tightening the screws in the other direction and making it there being more scrutiny applied to who is eligible to vote. We've seen a lot of states go in that direction. This seems to push in the other. Have other states done the voter routine?
Yes, but they are all smaller states. Let's not forget that California is home to 38 million people, somewhere on the magnitude of 17 to 18 million registered voters and more who are eligible but not registered. So I think the mechanics are harder in California, but California does have a legislature dominated by Democrats who were able to push this measure through and convince Governor Brown that it was worth looking at. But I think the devil's in the details, the implementation by DMV. You know, a lot of folks will remember, Dave, that the federal government passed this motor voter law back in the 90s to allow these two things to go together. California DMV does not have a great record of making that actually all work. And so I think there's a lot of work to be done to make sure that people actually can be registered. But if they register, it'll be fascinating to see if they turn out and cast ballots.
John Myers, our guest, Sacramento Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times. If you have a question for John about what the legislature has done or what they're about to do, you can join us at 866-733-6786 or email us at forum@kqed.org. John, I want to let you reference other things that took place in 2015, but I'd like to kind of shift our conversation a bit towards the year ahead. And perhaps one way of doing that is actually to reference something that the legislature did do in 2015, which was providing more licensing and regulatory structure for the medical marijuana industry in the state. And I'm curious about that in part because of what that may foretell, I guess, for how far the state goes, given what may happen with ballot initiatives on legalizing marijuana use in its entirety. But do you expect that issue of legalization of marijuana to be something that dominates California politics this year?
I certainly think it's going to be a big role in what we're talking about politically, both at the ballot with those ideas to legalize marijuana generally and back in the legislature in terms of enforcement over medical marijuana and potentially full legalization of marijuana. And I do think it's one of those issues, Dave, and I think it's really good that you brought it up. You know, we can't examine what happens in the state legislature and these laws and these proposals just in the narrow nature of a calendar year. This will bleed on, as will a couple of other things that we could talk about. And so you saw a big push to have a statewide system for medical marijuana in 2015 that's now on the books that will create a new state-level agency, the Bureau of Medical Marijuana Regulation. The acronym, of course, is BUMR, which gets a lot of jokes. but that new state entity will oversee some of these enforcement issues that have been left to local governments before. We're also seeing a lot of local governments around California now scrambling to put their own rules on the books because they have until late winter, early spring to do that under the new state law. And some communities are opting out completely of medical marijuana and say they don't want any of the sales by dispensaries in their communities. Of course, Bay Area is a very big exception to that, as is a lot of parts of Northern California. But I do think a lot of this debate is setting the stage for the broader political debate in 2016 about the merits or the negatives of full legalization of with marijuana. You've got ballot measures moving forward. I think you're going to see a lot of discussion about the medical component and the broader component in the weeks to come.
Everything was back in business in Sacramento today. The legislature reconvened. And there was also a state Supreme Court ruling that I'd like you to bring us up to date on, too, John, about kind of what you see as the coming stories ahead in Sacramento.
Well, I think the state Supreme Court ruling is an interesting one in the context of our conversation, Dave, because it all is about a ballot measure that the legislature wanted to put on the statewide ballot in 2014. So legislative action that the courts originally said they didn't have the power to. And just here on Monday, the state Supreme Court said, yes, they do. The ballot measure is an advisory measure. It would ask the citizens or the voters, I guess, the voters who show up in 2016, would ask the voters whether they want to overturn or whether they believe the rule should be overturned regarding campaign finance through the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in Citizens United. People remember that the High Court, the National High Court in 2010, loosened the restrictions greatly over money that flows through these nonprofit groups that is not aligned to candidates. And so as a result, we have hundreds of millions, billions of dollars in some cases flowing through national campaigns. And so this was an advisory measure asking voters, do they want California's voice to be heard? It's not binding in any way, shape or form. But there were politically some Democrats who thought it might drive more Democratic-minded people to the polls in 2014. And so now it appears with the state Supreme Court ruling that measure is going to be on the November 2016 ballot, which may drive people to the polls again, even though it's not binding. It does show to me the intersection between what the legislature wants the public to engage on and what the public ultimately engages on. Like, for instance, we could have issues about a water bond again, another water bond to borrow money for water resources. Will the legislature act to do something on that front? And are there other things that the legislature would like the voters to weigh in on? I think it's that interesting intersection in California between our elected officials in Sacramento and that direct democracy system that Californians, and I'm speaking as a non-Californian here, at least native, as Californians love so much. They really love to exercise their right to weigh in on ballot measures. And now they're going to get to perhaps in ways that are just advisory, that aren't even actually law, that are their opinion.
It is indeed a fascinating part of California politics, that interplay and intersection as you describe it. But what about just under the rotunda? I mean, things that actually will depend on real live actual legislative action, either in the Assembly, Senate, or both. Where do you see the key debates forming in the year ahead?
Well, we've certainly touched on some environmental issues, public safety issues. I think you're going to hear more about that. I think you're going to hear more about crime and punishment and this major generational change we're seeing in who are in our prisons and how we punish low-level crimes, nonviolent crimes, non-serious crimes. I do think we're also, though, going to see a pretty robust debate about economic issues. I mean, I do think the issues of affordable housing, the haves and have-nots, the gap between those communities in California, I think you're going to see a lot more on. And I think one more we're going to see something on are the issues of immigration. Immigration is a federal issue, but we are going to see more, I believe, about the very large population of Californians who are here without legal status. And one of the new laws that we didn't talk about allows undocumented youth to have access in low-income families to Medi-Cal, to the state's program for low-income families. We may see that expanded to all Californians who are from low-income families but don't have legal residency. That'll be a hot debate in Sacramento.
That brings me actually to something Skip writes in about. He wants us to comment, or you to comment, on Senate Bill 432, which removes the word alien from the labor code. And Skip writes, I wonder what they're going to replace it with. Foreigner, outlander, outsider, extraterrestrial. This is outright censorship and an attempt to undermine the English language. Was there something significant about that? Senate Bill 432?
Well, I think the significance probably is that it remove some of these distinctions that were in the law before. I mean, I think some of this is about removing language and leaving the language broader. I mean, I think we saw some of this, not to jump too far, but just as an example, with the debate about the language over same-sex marriage and how you defined who couples were. I think what we're simply talking about here are legislators who want to remove some of the terminology that was used in times past. Of course, it did spark a big debate about exactly what it means to be an immigrant and to be a Californian. And I think it also hearkened to some of the discussion about other words or symbols or images. For instance, there's a new law in 2016 that will start to phase out any high school that uses a racial mascot or uses the term Redskins. Again, these are, I think, distinctions that existed in times past that the laws are starting to reflect a way to take those distinctions away. They do spark robust debates, but I don't think it's a replacing them with a new word. I think it's about broadening the language to a larger set of Californians.
Joanne, I would like you to clarify, John, on the end-of-life options or past that allows physicians now to prescribe drugs for someone to use to end their life. And she writes, since that act was passed in a special session, is there a chance then that it could be repealed?
Well, there is actually, I think, an effort to try to overturn it by referendum, because the trigger for that is when the governor actually signs the bill, as I understand it. So those backers have been out there trying to gather signatures, but it's very hard to put something on the ballot. You're talking for a referendum somewhere in the magnitude of about 400,000, 500,000 signatures that you'd have to gather, and you only have a short amount of time to do that. I think more than likely it's a done deal for now. It'll go into effect. But I think, like with so many things that people often don't talk about with the way the legislature acts, Dave, legislature can take another action in another year. If they find something is not working the way they want it to, or if Californians don't like it, they can ask for something to be taken a second look at. So I think that this law, once that special session is adjourned, will go into effect 90 days after that, sometime in the spring of 2016, and we'll see how it actually takes effect, how often it's used, and if there are any concerns raised about it. And then, yeah, I think we would have that debate again if there are.
John, we just have a few seconds left, but real briefly, the governor has to come up with a budget. Of course, he's well on his way to coming up with it, but it has to be out there within the next week. What should we be watching for?
I think the biggest question is, in my mind, is how long the governor believes the current economic good times will continue. The economy has recovered in California. We've grown jobs. We have more tax revenues as a result. The key question is whether the governor sees that as a long-term or a short-term thing. Hmm. If he sees it as short-term, he's going to want to be very tight on the spending. Democrats in the legislature may think it's going to be longer term and want to boost some government programs. I think that's the key one to watch, and we'll know in a few days.
John Meyer, Sacramento Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times. John, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, whether you're affiliated with KQED or not. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Dave. Have a good year.
Thank you. Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Lauerberg, Judy Campbell, and Susan Britton. Our engineer is Jim Bennett. Our engagement producer, Amanda Stupai. And our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.